Hi everyone. For this month's podcast, I wanted to focus on LGBTQ inclusivity in the workplace. You may know that at CDH we produce a corporate guide every so few years. And in our corporate guide this year, we've included data that has been provided to us by Open for Business on inclusivity in the workplace and how that data then affects how businesses are successful or not. And it's very important, and it's very it's eye-opening for us to see that inclusivity in the workplace affects productivity and affects us all. So, to have this conversation, I have the best people for it. And with me is Levi's Derito. Levi's Derito is a strategic advisor for Workplace Pride, which advocates for inclusivity in the workplace. And I also have with me Patrick Oyo, who is the head of East Africa for Open for Business. I am delighted to have both of you here with me. I think you guys can provide a lot of education for us on LGBTQI inclusivity in the workplace and its relevance and its importance. So I really want to get into this conversation. Patrick, I want to start with you. Tell us about yourself. What are you willing to tell us?
What I'm willing to say.
Yeah, what are you willing to say?
So I'm raised in Nairobi. I'm in my mid-40s now, so getting longer in the tooth, I would say.
Still looking good, though.
Depends. Some days I think so. Some days I look at the mirror and I think, probably not.
Like all of us.
So raised in Nairobi and glad to be working in this environment because we are at such a point of transformation, and it's good to be, you know, part of something that's rapidly changing. I've sort of traversed different spaces, more creative space, because I love art and spend a lot of time.
Did you study
in studios? I did not study art.
What did you study?
Political science, economics.
Wow. Okay, so it's in that type of realm.
Exactly. Yeah. So at least that's something that I enjoy outside of the normal sort of academic and workspace.
Okay.
And then keeping as actively as possible.
Running.
Yeah. Riding. Lots of hiking.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, cool. All right. Wow. Levi, tell us about yourself. Tell us about your upbringing. What are you willing to tell us? I've learned that I have to be very careful. I'm trying my best. Okay. What are you willing to tell us?
Yeah, I'm Levi's Derito. I was born actually in Nyeri.
Okay.
Part of my childhood was in Nairobi, a part of it, and then we moved to Rift Valley for my primary school, high school as well, to Tumishi Boys Academy. Then, you know, later went to University of Nairobi. I'm a firstborn.
Firstborn?
Yes, in a family of four.
Yeah.
It's a blessing. It is also a challenge at the same time. I enjoy, reading, traveling, meeting people. And my background is in university, studied marketing for undergrad and for my MBA, and then later on international development.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're the perfect person to work in. Why do you think this work is so important, advocating for inclusivity? What does it mean to advocate for inclusivity in the workplace?
It is work that is very important because, every life is important, and every story matters. And I think in a society that excludes other people, it basically says you're less than. And so the idea of inclusion is really to ensure that everyone feels part of a society, included in the society, that you can have access to education, access to finance, that you're part of the economy, part of the society. So I think this work is important in that regard because we've seen so many marginalizations, whether you're a woman, a person with a disability, LGBTQ people, we've seen all these marginalizations that are in the society. And what we're saying is the society should work for everyone.
And what about Open for Business? How did Open for Business start? What does it do, and how does it promote inclusivity in the workplace?
So I would term Open for Business as being a research agency.
Okay.
That's been in existence for quite a number of years, but we've been working in East Africa since 2019. And we started with an economic case for LGBTQ plus inclusion in Kenya report. And since last year, we have a program that's now traversing the entire region. So Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and Rwanda being our focus countries. We work on LGBTQ plus advocacy through three ways. One, our research. So looking at the data that we provide. And it could be through very specific reports like the city report that that CDH cited. It could be through regional reports like our very recent report on the economic case for LGBTQ plus inclusion in East Africa. It could be country specific reports, but these are very rare, like an economic briefing that we worked on in Uganda. So the research forms the backbone of our programs. And we have a number of regional programs. So East Africa being one of the most recent. We have one in Southeast Asia and another in the Caribbean and one in Eastern Europe. And what we do is use the research, the data in our coalition of global companies to advocate for greater LGBTQ plus rights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's look at the city report, for example. The city report goes through, is it just Africa? We used your Africa index, and it demonstrates that where there is a lack of inclusivity in the workplace, cities are less, the businesses are less productive.
Yeah.
And if you look at those statistics, it's obvious to anyone that there's an economic case for inclusivity. Mm-hmm. So is that the kind of thing that you're advocating
That's
for?
That's the kind of thing that we're advocating for.
Yeah.
Because as Levi's talked about, you know, marginalization of one segment of society, what we end up doing is harming society as a whole.
Correct.
So we cannot look at these issues in isolation.
Yeah. And I mean, Levi's, I want to just be, you know, very candid, because to be honest, a lot of people don't have enough education on LGBTQ. What is LGBTQ? What do they stand for? What does it mean? How can people get more comfortable with that language, especially in Africa?
Absolutely. We keep on adding our alphabet.
Yeah, because it was LGBT first.
Yeah, so LGBTQ stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and Q is queer or questioning, depending. And there's also an I in there for
what
intersex.
Is I? Oh, okay.
Absolutely. All and right. then the plus. It's for like any other that we could have missed in that long alphabet.
Yeah. So the point is that every single person, however they identify, should be treated equally within the workplace, because obviously we have inherent biases from the fact that, you know, we come from either a Christian context or a background that does not or has not advocated traditionally for different types of people in the workplace.
Absolutely.
What about when businesses do try, or, you know, where there's a law in place that is, you know, preventing this kind of inclusivity, and businesses face a backlash, how do you encourage businesses to really promote or stay steadfast in the case for inclusivity?
Good question, Jerry. I think for businesses, one, they care about certain things. One, they care about money, revenue. And so it's important for businesses to see that inclusion actually drives revenue, expands market, expands your customer base. They care about brand, the brand reputation of an organization. Whether we think about a brand from an employer brand, which means a place where people want to work, so your ability to attract and keep talent. So that the best talent, when you want to think about attracting and keeping the best talent, then you must have a wider pool to bring that. Businesses care about innovation and better decision making. So when you have a diverse set of a group of people or employees, then you're actually better able to innovate and to be creative and to make better decisions. The other bit that businesses care about is risk. And, you know, law firms like yourself think about that all the time. Yeah. And here we're looking at risk around, if you discriminate, then there are lawsuits which become expensive, right? And finally, this aspect of values and culture, which is a very important one, especially in this times where organizations have to live by their values. I say the business case in and of itself is not enough. Organizations need to believe inherently that every human being is worthy, and therefore they need to be included. So you look at all these things that businesses care about, then you have a strong case to tell businesses you're better off as a business when you are inclusive than when you are not.
Yeah. How, I mean, everything that Levi's has said can be counter argued by the fact that the laws are not in place in many of these African countries to promote that. So there isn't an incentive for businesses to care at the moment, really. How are you guys fighting that at Open for Business? Or how are you making sure that your voice is heard? Because it needs to be not only at a business level, but at a governmental one as well.
So that's the kind of unique role that we play in this space, because we are there to provide information, to provide research, to provide facts.
Yeah.
And we work across the spectrum. So working closely with businesses, as I mentioned, we have a coalition of global companies that are part of Open for Business.
And that coalition of businesses are very strong businesses,
big businesses. Exactly, it's high-powered corporate organizations. Mm-hmm. And then we work with civil society as well to make sure that what we are producing resonates with any human rights arguments that they're going to be making, just to back it up with that economic case.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then obviously policymakers are our other audience.
Yeah.
So working with the diplomatic community, having discussions with policymakers at country level is quite crucial to changing that mindset.
Have you seen, in the time that you guys have been working, because I know that you've been working in this for a very long time, have you seen pressure that has resulted in actual results that you can talk about? Or is there small wins that you can point to?
I can think of small wins. Mm-hmm. So when our East Africa report was released, one of the things that I was very nervous about was the reception that it would have in the media. And across the board, particularly with Kenyan papers and Kenyan media outlets, what we got was a sense of alarm. Journalists sort of telling the government that, hey, if we are going to be serious about Vision 2030, if we are going to be very serious about economic development, this is something that we need to look into because the potential losses are too huge.
Yeah.
So I think that's already changing the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a lot of positive movements in the courts recently.
Yeah.
Like this case in Eldoret at the High Court, that's sort of compelling Parliament to have a discussion on a transgender bill.
Yeah.
So I think we are at a point where Kenya is making quite huge strides in these areas, but there's also the very real danger of backsliding and getting into a very tricky situation that Uganda, for instance, has found itself in.
Yeah. And I guess it's a patchwork of laws across Africa, and not everyone is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So which country would you say is the most progressive? South Africa, because they have
South Africa would be a lot more progressive. Yeah. If I zero in on the East Africa region, you have Rwanda, which decriminalized years ago.
Okay.
And then you have the other extreme of Uganda, which has probably one of the harshest pieces of legislation globally.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kenya and Tanzania, which are sort of swinging in a kind of weird situation where it's a lot of this is sort of embedded in colonial era penal codes.
Yeah.
Have we really had the opportunity to investigate the source of these laws?
Yeah.
Investigate whether they're the right fit for society as it is right now.
Yeah.
So I guess we're at that point where we're really debating and really discussing.
And I guess there is a changing landscape. The younger the population, obviously Gen Zs are much more in tune with that, with understanding that different people people are different, and not everyone is going to be the same, and more inclusive, you know, generally. I think there's a gap in the generations, right?
Yeah.
As the older generation, obviously, are still stuck in maybe stuck in their ways is the right word. Just so that I'm clear, do people are you also taking on cases for individuals, or do you hear from individuals' complaints? Do you deal with those, or do you just do the advocacy part?
Yeah, for us, no, we don't take individual cases. We do have organizations that do that within our own country. But for us, it's really working with companies. I'm sure the same thing for Open for Business as well, to really see how companies can move their inclusion agenda forward.
Mm. What would you say is the most misunderstood concept about being an inclusive business? If you were talking to a business today, that is grappling with this, what would you say is the most misunderstood element of this?
Two elements, I think.
Okay.
One is that businesses are legal entities, mm-hmm. and they operate within a legal context. And so when you think about the penal code that we have, Section 162, 164, then businesses will wonder, we want to do this, want to be inclusive, but then we have these laws within the country. How then do we balance these two, right? So that's the first one.
Mm-hmm. And what is your answer to that, Patrick?
That's a tough one because, I think any business or has a primary duty to safeguard its staff, to safeguard its management. So if you're in a situation, for instance, in Uganda, where there's a promotion clause within the Anti-Homosexuality Act, I don't think you have much room to maneuver.
Yeah, because promotion can be anything.
Promotion could be anything. Yeah. I could have like a rainbow sticker on my laptop and I could be accused of promoting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think the primary objective that management should have is safeguarding their staff.
Okay.
So unfortunately, that might mean inclusion looking different in different contexts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I've seen situations where, you know, you can have employee resource groups that don't need to be registered. You know, it's a simple association within the company that provides a platform to discuss these issues, that provides a platform for people to bring for the challenges that they're facing.
So like an
for management, exactly, an informal group.
Yeah.
And management should really be involved in the formation of these informal groups.
Okay. Okay. I mean, that's a great idea. What was the second point that you were going to say?
Social, cultural challenges.
Okay.
Business also operate within a certain social, cultural norms, right? And so if the norms of a society then are not accepting, then businesses will shy off. And here, you know, looking at my marketing background, when I think about advertising or products that you actually come up with, then it becomes restrictive because, you know, in certain norms, the sense, especially when I think about, you know, Kenya or Africa generally, the norms of like, these are not our African values,
correct,
or these are not the norms of a society. Then there's that challenge of, we want to be inclusive as an organization, develop inclusive products and inclusive marketing, but then we are within this, you know, context.
Yeah.
How then do we approach that? So that is also another challenge that I see. Yeah.
How do you then, within these social norms, etc., build narratives or have narratives that are culturally relevant and also promote, you know, LGBTQ or inclusivity and are rights based? How do you do that? Can any one of you answer?
I'll take this first.
Okay.
From a marketing and comms or brand perspective, you appeal to the universal needs of a people. We all want to feel included. We want to feel a sense of belonging. We all are seeking the same things. So once you appeal to that universality of those needs, then it kind of shapes that narrative. So that also inclusion is not seen in isolation, that we are only thinking about one group of people. So you think about inclusion broadly, right? That any person who has been excluded within society, whether it's women, people with disability, LGBTQ people, companies can say, we are open for business to everyone, right? Yeah, we are a company that includes everyone. And even in our own country, we see even the issue of tribe and ethnicity as well. So companies that embrace that diversity or that sense of inclusion, then they're better off, and then the framing is broader. So that is kind of how you kind of navigate this challenge.
What I'm talking about is the language that can be used. And I don't know, you know, sometimes you think of a policy for a business, even maybe looking internally for our policies, and the language may not be appropriately inclusive because it's very much in the he or she or, you know, tones. How do businesses change that? Do you have like things or materials that people can use so that they can be better informed?
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's
Patrick, for you, perhaps. Patrick.
We don't we don't play that sort of advisory role to businesses like workplace pride.
Yeah. You guys do?
Yeah, we do have a guide. For example, we develop a toolkit where companies can actually work and collaborate with civil societies that are LGBTQ related. And yes, it's true that there is indeed a gap in terms of supporting organizations directly. And largely it's because one of those challenges that I earlier on highlighted. Yeah. So companies find themselves in this dilemma. However, what, you know, for me, in terms of progress, I say, we might not start from changing policies and all of these things at first, but there is the broader language that we use first that is welcoming. So you kind of like can appeal to that first. And then as we progress as a society, as the laws become more favorable, then again, now we can get into the policy, particularly when I think about local companies. Mm-hmm. For multinationals, that could be a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, at multinationals, I think they are affected by the fact that their laws have changed and then they have had to adapt.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about the intersection between those multinationals which are placed here and then local companies. Because a lot of people may say a multinational, you know, they're coming with their Western ideas. We are very much African. And then there's that clash of culture when you arrive at a multinational and then expected to conform. How does that play a part in making sure that we are also, in fact, educating ourselves at the same time?
Again, it's those employee resource groups that I'd cited earlier. That could be a really perfect tool to use. Actually, during the entire research process before we put the East Africa report together, this is one question that a lot of companies would ask.
Yeah.
How do we have this discussion? Do we know what's legal and not what's not legal?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are operating in a gray area, and we were able to provide some guidance.
Yeah.
And so it's just that lack of information that, if provided, can change the entire discussion.
In fact, it's a good point, because how were you measuring it? How did you get your data? What is a measure of inclusivity for you?
So, I mean, it was a mixed methods approach that we used. So we conducted a survey that was specifically targeted at civil society, at policymakers and businesses. And we did that in the four countries that were in the report. We also looked at secondary data. So a lot of previously produced work provided a huge part of the backbone that put the report together. And then individual interviews.
Okay.
And some focus group discussions as well.
Okay. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I can add to that, Injury. I used to lead diversity inclusion work for a big global nonprofit.
Yeah.
So one of the ways we used to measure inclusion is through our employee engagement surveys.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd have inclusion questions. And then once, you know, say folks self-identify within the survey, there was no requirement, but you self-identify if you self-identify as LGBTQ. And then we would look at the metrics of your sense of inclusion or engagement over time. And we saw, like, you know, where I used to work, at first, the first engagement survey we did was the LGBTQ people had the lowest engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And
engagement in the survey?
Yes. Okay. Engagement in the sense of how they are engaged within the company, okay. how they show up and okay. all of that kind of stuff. So there are different metrics that, you know, could speak to the engagement component. Okay. And then what we found out, to Patrick's point, we started investing in the employee resource groups, and particularly, say, the Pride resource group. And we actually could track the changes. Okay. And through these interventions over, I think, a period of 2 years, we actually started seeing changes within the engagement scores, okay. which speak now to the level of inclusion. So that okay. could be one way.
That's a great way of measuring. But let me just ask this question then. In terms of the survey that you're conducting on inclusivity, is the barometer of inclusivity the same for everyone? Or is there different levels of inclusivity given the fact that we're in an African context? Are you asking someone, you know, can they openly come to work, you know, as themselves, when that would not be the case here, but it could be the case, for example, in Europe?
So within the survey is the same for everyone.
Okay.
However, when you look at the demographic data, because that was part of it, so you're able to analyze your data looking at, say, people who have identified as women, how is that sense of inclusion, right? You know, people of color, LGBTQ people, people with disability, etc. So it's really looking at the data and going to the correlation of those demographics with what they have reported okay. on over time.
Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Yeah.
Just on that question of, you know, and I guess maybe in the Biden era, it was, you could say, I identify as, or yeah. there was a he, she.
The pronouns.
The pronoun things, and people would put them in their email. And now in the Trump era, that has literally fallen away. How yeah. does that impact on your work now? Is it that it is much more acceptable to be non-inclusive in this day and age?
I wouldn't say non-acceptable to be non-acceptable to be less inclusive. It's. I think everyone is nervous. We're only yeah. 8 months into a new administration, and people are sort of trying to figure out where things will land. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies may, on the surface, have rolled back on a lot of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives that they were working on. But that does not mean that the work does not continue quietly yeah. and in private. And what we have seen, and I won't give examples of companies within our coalition, but what we have seen is that some companies have actually doubled down on it,
yeah,
or very cleverly renamed it,
yeah.
But I think the commitment is still there, because people do realize that if the less inclusive you are, it's harmful. It's harmful for business performance. It's harmful for economic performance as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you heard of this term called ally fatigue?
I wanted to be a little bit controversial on the pronoun bit before we talk.
Go ahead.
Be careful.
Be as controversial as you can.
Yes. I really think, one, pronouns, or saying your pronouns or having them, does not denote whether you're inclusive or not. Let's start from there. And then also...
I wanted to be clear. What you're saying is that even if you... use the pronoun, it doesn't mean that you're inclusive or not.
That's correct.
But it's like lipstick on a pig.
It's not an indicator of your sense of inclusion,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is that the LGBTQ movement, I think, placed a premium on the pronouns. And then what ended up happening is that to an extent, we lost some allies, and we also lost people who would have been advocates mm-hmm. because, say, for example, if I get your pronoun wrong, people are not showing grace, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So because of that, then it became a whole issue, right? So I really think that is, I think where the rain started beating us in a way, that aspect of showing grace. And because I would, you know, you probably look different from your name or from the pronoun you're using. And if I don't get it right, then it becomes a whole situation, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel that is kind of where the challenge started. And I think part of the backlash that we are seeing within the LGBTQ movement partly is because of some of the premiums we placed on say, pronouns, rather than truly opening up conversations, truly giving grace to others who are not able to sort of get it right the first time.
Yeah. I mean, when I looked at, and Patrick, I'll allow you to go. Yeah. When I looked at the whole pronouns thing, and the doubling down on get my pronoun right, it's kind of a full circle moment because people have felt so non-included before. Now, just make sure that you get my name right and, you know, give me the respect that I deserve. And I think that's where you lost, you're right, you lost people because it was too much of a pressure to get, you know, if you make a mistake, then what happens?
Exactly.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, I think you're very brave to actually stated that.
Why?
A lot of people do think that, I mean, I think a lot of people are of the same opinion.
I think you're right.
The other thing is the cultural context.
Yeah. Okay.
And so when something does resonate in the West, does not mean it's going to resonate here. And this is something that I've always told people who work at Open for Business as well, that no, we need to look at perspectives from the context that we are in East Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Not going to accept anything else.
But if you, and just to challenge that, if you accept the context in a particular forum, how do you make the change? Because then maybe you're just saying, let's just leave it because we don't talk about it in East Africa. And then that kind of, you know, leverages it there.
I don't think it's saying leave it because it doesn't resonate here. And then this gets into a very controversial conversation, which we're probably not going to have.
Why?
The LGBTQ plus movement in the West is not the same movement that you see in Africa.
In Africa.
Or in you know, in developing countries. It's not the same movement.
Okay.
You know, people are, you know, arguing about marriage equality on one end. On this end, people are talking about survival. Mm. I don't think those are the same fights.
Mm. They're not this, and you're right, Patrick. And I just want to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same fight for where we are now.
Yeah.
But it's a fight that they may want to have at a later time.
I mean, right? Hopefully one day we'll get to the point where we're arguing about pronouns in East Africa. But I always say, like, when look at our own traditional languages.
Okay.
Everyone is they, them, really, right?
Okay. Okay. I mean, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay. I understand.
So it should be a non-issue.
It's a very, you know, it's a complex conversation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do for the purposes of this is demonstrate that if you're not being inclusive, irrespective of how you show up, it's an economic harm for businesses. And that's really it. Let's talk about ally fatigue, okay? In the context of the workplace or even in the context of trying to run a successful business in Africa. Have you heard of ally fatigue?
No, tell me about it.
Well, it says here. No. It's like being too aligned with LGBTQ plus, right?
You can never be too aligned.
I knew you'd say that.
You can never be too aligned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you can never be too aligned. Yeah. I just feel if you're inclusive, then it's, you know, you accept people as they are, the whole of them, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have very little to say about ally fatigue, but the way I would look at it is, in our context here, homophobia and misogyny are so strongly interlinked.
Mm-hmm.
And until attitudes towards women change, I don't think we're going to have any change in attitudes towards LGBTQ plus people.
I mean, that is absolutely
It's as simple
right.
as that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's true, isn't it? I think that the misogyny does play a huge role in the ability for inclusivity to be prevented. Okay, what is the next inflection point for us on the continent? Maybe you can pinpoint a particular country. What is the next inflection point that will change the course of inclusivity for businesses?
I think looking at the legal framework, the legal frameworks on the continent, that will be the inflection point. For Kenya, we have the risk of the Family Protection Bill, which will be mirroring as much of the Anti-Homosexuality Act in Uganda as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And just based on the research that we produced, we've seen that Uganda has had 3.3% of its GDP wiped out as a result of enacting that law.
Mm-hmm. I want to touch on that, Patrick, because when you talk about 3.3% of the GDP being affected, it's things like talent flight.
Talent flight, yeah. International aid. You're looking at healthcare costs. You're looking at policing.
Okay.
And the list is endless.
And all of those things are directly correlated to the fact that...
Directly correlated to the bill. So we haven't even looked, or now the act, we haven't even looked at the indirect costs.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for the economic powerhouse of the region, Kenya, to adopt a law of that nature, we're looking at a regional loss of about 7.8 billion.
Gosh.
Right now, we're currently at $5 billion.
Loss.
Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if Kenya adopts a bill, the bill and enacts it as a law, we're looking at an even bigger loss. Should the same pattern of events that happened in Uganda happen here?
Okay. Right.
So that's a massive risk that we're facing right okay. now.
And just so that we're on the same page, are you advocating at the moment? Do you do at Workplace Pride, perhaps you're doing advocacy on the bill?
No, we're not doing advocacy for
the bill. Oh, you're not?
No, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are other organizations.
Absolutely, yes. Okay. Yes, yes.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, we're not doing it
yeah,
either.
Yeah.
But we provide the information that other organizations can be able to use their arguments.
Okay. And then just so that we're on the same page as well, are there statistics on if there is inclusivity, what the positive results of that are?
Yeah, there is data.
Yeah.
We're looking at, we correlated what's happening here to other places that have become more inclusive, mm-hmm. looking at countries in Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. looking at South Africa, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are patterns to show that should you become more inclusive, there's a strong correlation with economic growth.
Okay.
Looking at the cities report, for instance, we've seen that more inclusive cities have four times the ability to generate more income, to attract more investment. So the facts are there, the data speaks for itself.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that we can, and perhaps in this podcast, include a link to the
yes.
report so that people can have the data for themselves if they're interested. But it really is a simple, it's an economic good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Jaria, I wanted to add on that
yes.
inflection point, I mm-hmm. think. And you did mention it to an extent. When we think about the trends, particularly with the younger generations, I feel Africa being a very young continent, I think the youngest in the world with an average age of, I think, 19 years, thereabout, I feel there is hope for a society that is more inclusive, largely because these younger people are more inclusive and they demand this sense of inclusion from companies and as well as governments. I also see hope with technology and digitization and AI, mm-hmm. Having more, LGBTQ people within the workforce, for example, because you can work from home, you can work from
Correct.
Anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So some of those barriers that used to be there in terms of accessing markets will be removed and, thanks to technology. Financial inclusion as well, technology allows that the LGBTQ people can participate within the economies. So I do see some of this, macro trends, helping to advance inclusivity in addition to what Patrick also talked about.
I mean, those are all, very... very relevant. But there's a push-pull, right? So mm-hmm. for example, on the working from home, great during COVID, and then people are insisting everyone has to come back to work, right?
Yeah.
The financial inclusion, there's a push-pull as well. How do you make sure that everyone has access to the relevant banking,
mm-hmm.
are able to access, accounts, et cetera, et cetera. Otherwise, we rely on, M-Pesa and that kind of thing. AI, I think, is a great equalizer for everyone.
Yeah.
The data will speak for itself.
We'll see.
you're skeptical.
I have my skepticisms about AI. I might not want to get into them too much, but
Patrick,
I think we're rushing. We're really rushing like headfirst into something that we don't really understand.
Mm.
I'm not trying to be very conservative in my thoughts about this, but I'm sort of thinking, companies, for instance, should have been thinking about their AI policy way before where we've got to already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or if they haven't thought about it at this point, they should really be thinking about it at this point.
No, I think AI policies, all of that, are extremely relevant and need to be put in place irrespective.
Like even the larger legal framework, have we thought about this?
There is thought, especially because the data that, how it's pulled together does not necessarily emanate from the continent or is not relevant to the continent. So there are all manner of arguments on that. But you're right. Turning to advice, both of you, what advice would you give to, you know, a business that is struggling at the moment with trying to balance inclusivity, trying to make sure that it's doing the right thing? What advice, in the African context, what advice would you give first? And we've talked about the employee informal groups. Anything else that we can give them?
I would say that there are three different, you know, sort of maturity levels in terms of the inclusion curve. One is called When in Rome. So you sort of a business just being...
When in Rome.
When in Rome.
Yeah.
So a business operates just within the laws of a certain country. There's the embassy model in which within the four walls of your organization, you can choose to be inclusive and create inclusive spaces. And of course, there's the advocacy, which is the you know, sort of the ultimate that every organization will go out there and be advocates of inclusion. So for me, the advice I would give, I would pray that more organizations get to the embassy model where they create safe spaces within the four walls of their organizations that anyone, whether you are a woman, a person with disability, LGBTQ person, you will feel safe within those four walls of that organization.
I mean, I love that. When in Rome, embassy model, and then the advocacy.
Yes.
I love that. Yeah. Patrick?
The only thing I'd add to what you, the way you very beautifully put it is, highlighting how important individual performance is to the greater goals that the company or the organization has.
Right.
If people are very comfortably themselves at work, they will be more innovative. They'll be more creative. They will be very, very comfortable in their own skin. And that's ultimately very successful.
And then that leads to better performances.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, completely understood on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, both of you are in careers which... I would not say are conventional in the type in the terms of the industry. I guess maybe advocacy is, but not in this context. Just so that we, you know, to get some background, how did you end up here, Levi's, at Workplace Pride?
It's a long story. How much time do you have, Jerry?
A lot of time for you. I have a lot of time.
Yeah. One, I looked at the society and I saw the inequities, and I'll make it personal because it is personal for me. This is a story I share over and over, but it's the truth. So I remember after university, got good grades because my parents told me, you know, when you get good grades, a good job will come.
Correct.
And that never happened. One of the things that my parents didn't tell me was how society actually works and the discriminations around it, whether real or perceived. So I did an interview in some big company management trainee. This is just after university, and went all the way to the final level of interviews. And one manager said, with your voice, you cannot work here. And he was right. I didn't get the job. But it was also wrong because there are other organizations that were inclusive and hired me, right?
Okay.
And so I saw firsthand what discrimination or bias looks like. And I told myself I would like to contribute to the society in creating a society that is more inclusive, a society where that the biases people have are reduced because we can never eliminate them, really. Yeah, so it's personal for me.
Yeah.
And my purpose now is to create organizations or work to create a society and organizations that are truly inclusive for everyone, regardless of who you are, your background, or who you love.
I mean, I love that, Levi's. I really love that. And I thank you so much for sharing such a personal story. I know, Patrick, I can't extract anything.
No, you probably extract a few things. I don't know. I think the path that I've had has been a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And working in the international development space for almost 20 years,
yeah,
it's been that embassy model.
Mm.
And so I found that every workplace that I've been in has been quite inclusive, or was sort of live and let die, just get on with things.
Yeah.
All we're interested in is performance. Yeah. All we're interested in is getting the job done.
Yeah.
But how I got to Open for Business, this is a diversion from what I've normally been doing.
Because you were in international development.
International development, yeah. And particularly focused on systems thinking.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And for me, this was part of that, again, investigation of systems.
Okay.
So looking at one specific group of people within one specific segment within a larger society, how does this affect the whole?
Yeah.
And so working on that economic case became an interesting thing.
Yeah.
So let's look at all these different nodes in East Africa and try to figure out.
When I heard about Open for Business and I saw the city's report, it immediately made sense to me for us to include it, because it just makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're losing money because you're not doing something, that it could easily be, cured by an embassy model or an advocacy model. It just makes sense. And I think that it's very valuable work. I want to get into advice for people who want to get into this kind of work, or who want to get into advocacy or supporting, those who are marginalized. How would you encourage them to get into this type of work? What advice would you have for them?
I would tell them, whichever industry you are in, whether you're in finance, tech, hospitality, whatever, within your space, choose to create a world that works for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because everyone, I think, can contribute in a way. As a lawyer, you can contribute in a way. As a pastor, you can contribute in a way. As a teacher, you can contribute in a way. As a recruiter, when you're hiring people, you can contribute in a way. So I think everyone has something to offer. You don't have to be out there, the courts or whatever. You can advocate within the boardrooms, can advocate within the society that you are in.
Yeah.
I think for me, the advice I would give is be open. Because the more open you are, the more you have an ability to learn. The more you have an ability to learn, the more you have an ability to offer.
Yeah.
But also counter that with being very resilient, because it's not an easy path.
Yes. And so even speaking of resilience in this kind of environment, and when you're facing that, backlash or, negativity, how do you deal with that?
You have a good therapist on hand. and running helps.
Running helps.
Because you physically extract all the stress from your body.
Levi's?
What?
What is your coping mechanism?
My coping mechanism is I take a lot of walks.
Mm-hmm.
I love listening to music. And I read. So
Do you feel positive about the work that you're doing?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. I've seen progress.
Yeah.
We would not be having this conversation 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
It have been really hard. I have seen progress. And what I know, it truly gets better. Mm. So I have seen progress. So it's work that when I see young people, whether it's on TikTok or Instagram, just being themselves, it gives me hope that the world can be better and more inclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do think that the work that you guys are doing is extremely important. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come and sit and talk to me. And you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you so
much. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next month.